What's up, creators? Welcome back to the Media 1099 podcast. My name is Michael Duran. I'm here with my co-host Robert Husky, talking freelance and art in 2020. Today, we're going to be talking about producing a podcast from the ground up and what those growing pains are. So don't go anywhere, folks. This is going to be a really fun episode for us. We've got a couple sponsor ads coming up, and then we'll get right to it. Okay, good morning, Robert. How are you, man?
Good. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. So this is a fun episode for us because we get to talk about this actual podcast, you know, and what we've done developing it from the ground up. We're going to be talking about growing pains, what we've learned, you know, some of the real challenges that we face, whether they're via writing, marketing, the production itself, all the above. Let's just get this started. What do you want to talk about first as far as a growing pain for you?
Well, the reason this kind of came up is because we have been shifting what our podcast is. You know, like at first it was just, dude, let's meet once a week and kind of talk about photography. And now it's kind of like, one, we're pushing a website, we're building a website, I'm writing, you're writing, we're doing more research, we're doing more interviews. And so what our goals have been and have become have shifted, and we failed along the way of been like, oh, this was a technological hiccup. This interview didn't go quite as well. This podcast wasn't as well. And it's just, it was fun looking back and seeing the small failures that made, in my opinion, this podcast progress and more successful.
Yeah. And so I'll add to that, like, it sounds to me like the first thing that comes to mind is the branding aspect of it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, you're building a brand, and we didn't intend for that to happen, but we are. And so when you're shifting, and this kind of reminds me of the James Patrick interview when we talked about how his brand is shifting, but it doesn't give you an excuse not to go out and promote it and go out and get this in front of the people that you need to be in front of. When you're talking about, like, yeah, building the website and everything there, and, you know, whether it's the social, like that branding aspect of like how we wanted to shift, talk me through what you felt like when we first started, like your vision of it and how that vision has now changed a little bit.
Well, at first, I mean, I feel like part of my personality is like, I like having things feel very secure before like trying new aspects. Like I view life as like a hockey goalie, like keep everything in front of me. Like, let's just don't get, yeah, let anything go by. And that's really not a good thing when trying to expand a brand. But in that personality, I think I don't want to worry about expanding too much. Like, at first, it was just audio. I mean, that was the only thing that I had to worry about, kind of archiving, right, like producing, making sure that sounds good. And then it's like, okay, cool. You do that for a little bit and you realize I need a system of making sure we have a backup. Things are put into place because now this one recording is maybe two recordings, or, you know, these interviews are taking longer. And I don't like getting too much work on the back end piled up before having another episode put together. So I just wanted to make sure that we were like pumping the brakes a little bit, where you're like, dude, let's go on the attack, which is great because we kind of push each other a little bit.
Right.
But in building this brand, I was just like, we need to work on building systems. And is that, okay, what are the new responsibilities for, you know, the website? Like, who's taking control, like, or who's taking control of producing when we have interviews, or who's doing emails? And so I think all these small little steps to like step around the whole question, like all these small little steps and changes are what I've been working on the brand, of making sure we're not too far out in front compared and getting overextended where we can't recover and make sure this works for a long period of time.
Right. One of the interesting parts for me is the development of this podcast is when we first started doing it from episode one to episode, like whatever it is, 82, over the course of, has it been 2 years plus now? I don't even know.
Yeah, it's like two plus.
But it's from episode one, to paint the picture of what our vision was, and it's hard to say because I think we both had different visions, but it was like, let's just do it. There was it didn't have a vision. That's kind of what it was. It was just like, hey, you know, let's just talk about shit that's on our mind.
Yep.
And then it became more about interview centric and it became more about providing value. At least this is kind of the transition for me. This is how I kind of view it. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, instead of having more, you know, conversations. I mean, this is a great conversation here about the growing pains of podcasting. I think it can help a lot. But we're also doing more episodes that are geared towards how would this actually help the audience. So for me, it's less, it started off being, what can I talk about? And now it I view it as, what can the audience learn? So yeah. it's a subtle difference, but I think it's a huge difference when you're talking about marketing. You and I have talked about this off air about my view on promotion and marketing now has kind of shifted. And James Patrick, I credit a lot of that to him, as well as the thought leaders that I had been reading last year and moving towards, you know, instead of going promotion 100% of the time, every episode we promote, it flipped now. So now it might be, I don't want to say 80-20 because 80-20 is an actual Pareto rule. Like that's a different type of thing, but like I'd say 90% of it is now value and 10% is promotion. And to me, I think that's a huge difference in approach. So that changes the marketing thing and it provides different challenges. But just from a branding perspective, that kind of has been an interesting development for me and how that has shifted. Does it feel different to you at all? Does it feel like, because I would say my concept on that is that it feels like we have purpose now.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree that when we first started, it was just like, let's just talk, like, let's just get this podcast started. Like, whatever the spark was, it just started going. And I do think we now focus more on value for the audience because yeah, like, I don't know, who wants to hear two guys talking about the same thing over and over again?
Right.
Like, we picked all the low-hanging fruit, and now it's like, okay,
right.
You have to expand your field of view. And not so much from like a branding point of view, I'm kind of going to like swerve a little bit, but the value of it is before the amount of time we would put into a podcast was maybe like 1 or 2 hours, you know? And now like I value our time, one that we research into this, like all the back end stuff of emails, just reading about people, trying to read thought leaders and like become one, I guess, in ourselves, like in our network and industry, and realize that like, okay, now because we have an audience that values our opinion, we have to value our time and really put effort into it. Like I become really focused and have dedicated time to this podcast, and we're not, you know, making in hundreds of thousands of dollars or like great revenue, but I think it's a responsibility on my part and on your part to like really be aware of what we're saying and how we could maybe like influence people. And with that, there is some part responsibility on ourselves.
No, I agree. I agree completely. You know, the fact that we decided to start going down this road of provide more value, that ups the game automatically, because it's like, now we can't go back to, hey, let's just talk about this bullshit topic.
Yeah.
You know, unless it provides value. So it has forced us to be like, okay, so we'll, you know, we can talk about this, but yeah, you know, we don't really have expertise in that, you know, so let's try to find things that we can research so we gain some expertise or bring this to light and so that the audience really comes away with something. So I think that has become challenging, is one of those challenges of, you know, scripting this stuff, like deciding what topics we're going to be talking about, what guests we're going to bring on. It's hard to go back to now just saying, hey, let me just bring on any friend that has picked up a camera and say, hey, you're going to be a great podcast guest. Now it's like, well, we're starting to get people that have, I don't want to dismiss other people. It's just, they have a certain clout. They have a certain credibility that is pushing this podcast brand forward. And so it's hard to say, okay, let's revert back and let me just put on this person who is once at one point done this. Now it's like, hey, we're just looking for people that are really going to drive this train forward and really get people to listen to what their words are, because they have so much more credibility. And it's like, oh man, yeah, like that to me has forced us to be, like you said, responsibility. It's a responsibility to them. And it forces you to up your game, which has been a challenge, but a welcome challenge.
Yeah. And speaking of, you know, upping our game and kind of taking steps forward, you know, once again, this podcast that we're recording on, like, we're not face to face, you know, we're doing this through Zencastr currently. And that, I mean, one, I think it's great because we don't have to spend time in traffic or, like, you know, dodging that, like, 30 minutes to an hour of not having to drive is like an hour I could put into putting show notes together and having research. But that comes with its own technical challenges, you know, like we've interviewed people and we've had half an interview go missing or our kind of roles replace of who's producing the podcast, you know, because when we're in face to face, I'm the one that presses the red button and like, all right, we're live, quote unquote. But in Zencastr, since you were sending out the emails and communicating more with our interviewees, you were the one to press the red button. And then we had some technical issues and like some failures happened. And those growing pains of like having to send an email and be like, hey, I think you have to reopen this. You kind of lost the file. Those suck.
They suck big time.
So bad. And it ruins some of the interviews. And then luckily we've been able to make them work. But can you talk about what are some like maybe technical sides of the growing pains for this podcast you've had?
So like obviously right off the bat, you just mentioned Zencastr. Zencastr for the most part is fantastic in terms of its interface. It's simplistic and minimalistic, which is exactly down my alley. The issue is that their redundancy isn't quite there. You need redundancies. We have to have backups and we have to have a foolproof way of like once we press start recording and then once we press stop recording that we have the audio tracks. That did not happen twice. And we've only done like two or three actual interviews on Zencastr. So that is a huge percentage, like 70% of the time it's failing for us. So maybe it's human error. Maybe it's like my error. Maybe it's internet connection, but those are growing pains for sure. And I don't know 100% of how to guarantee that we get, especially our guest audio track, because for you and myself, if mine goes missing, that's okay. As long as we have the guests, I can re-record my questions afterwards and we can edit together. But I can't ask for the guests to give them more time than they've already given us. And we had a huge scare with the James Patrick one where his audio file did not show up. And I was like, okay, this is fun times. And for the entire day, just walking through painting this picture for everybody, that day I was so pumped. I've never been more pumped for an episode because I wanted to talk to James. And I thought his content itself was so fantastic and tactic filled and strategy filled and philosophy filled that it was the most value that I ever gained from a podcast episode. But when we lost the audio file, I said, holy shit, I can't possibly ask this guy to do another hour and a half interview. And then you lose that magic.
Yeah.
And then like 10 hours later, somehow we get the audio file. I'm not sure what exactly happened. I think he had to go through it again and find it. And, you know, those are just growing pains from that standpoint. And then recently we just did an interview where we actually legit did lose half of our interview.
Yeah.
And we couldn't recover that. So we had to reschedule again to have that guest come back on and re-record the second half. So those are for sure growing pains. It makes us look less professional, like we don't know what we're doing. And we're occupying people's time in a way that I think is, you know, not quite okay. So those are definitely challenges. The other challenges would really just be, I would say the marketing standpoint, figuring out, and it's not really technical, but it's more just figuring out how we're going to script this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more figuring out what the scheduling is going to be for your blog posts to make it consistent. You know, how often are you going to do an Instagram post versus an Instagram story versus a prospecting email versus a Instagram TV? Like, how are you going to do this? The more consistent you are, the better. But that part is hard to get consistent.
Yeah. And I think part of that is just we have and still need to shift how we communicate on things, because before it was like we'd meet once a week and that was adequate. because we'd record, kind of figure out what we're going to talk about next week. And now it's kind of like, we need to talk maybe like 3 or 4 times a week, maybe for like 10 minutes and just kind of, hey, did you get this email? Does this time work for you? How are your talking points on this? What are we doing moving forward? And that's a little bit of a change in perspective as well, you know, because now we need to schedule that time of non-recording time and viewing. It's interesting to me now, I guess, that we're looking at is like viewing the amount of time we talk to record versus the amount of time we talk to prep for talking.
True.
You know, and just working on that system, as well as just the whole like back end archiving stuff, but learning like for the website, right? Like learning new communication skills is like, I'm writing again and I haven't written in a long time. And you kind of helped edit and kind of shape my piece a little bit, which I think made it 100 times better. But just learning those new systems takes time, you know, and it takes effort. And I think it's just getting that first pen to paper was a little bit tricky. And also that comes with, you know, anything new. But for me, kind of how I got over that was just like, dude, there's like nobody that's going to read this. So the pressure is like super low. It's not like I'm shooting, you know, or giving a speech in front of 100,000 people.
You're not doing a TED speaker. Talk. Yeah.
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 Exactly.
And so, no, but I think just jumping on this Zencastr for strategy sessions has been hugely beneficial.
Yeah.
Because it's, I don't know why. I think maybe because it's formal to a degree. You're putting on your headphones, you're getting your mic set up, and we're just doing this with no intention of actually recording it. Feels a little bit more like we're down to business as opposed to a phone call. I don't know why, but for me, it's just like, okay, yeah, now we're into work mode. Like we have this 10-minute strategy session where it's like, okay, what are we going to talk about? What does our schedule look like for this week? Can we actually do this interview face-to-face at this location with this person or not? And sometimes, yeah, like you said, you're just upping that, the amount of strategy, because you realize like when in a business, people work, you know, right next to each other. They're in the same office, or they're, you know, you have your office and they have theirs, but it's like, you know, a cartwheel away. So this is our way of just kind of keeping that communication going more. And so it just allows us to have more creative strategy based off of like, okay, well, where are we going to do this for the website? How are we going to do this marketing? How are we going to do this? How does your blog post look? And also just having these kind of deadlines, I think was really great. Yeah. Like we had a goal of like, hey, let's have a website up by February 1st. I think it was what it was, I think.
Yeah.
And I remember like you were going to be the one to take care of that, and then it didn't happen. And I was like, okay, well, let's just do it because we have that deadline that we set for ourselves. Not that anybody else did. We just wanted to do it. And now I think it looks great. And, you know, we still have like little tweaks to it. But it's been awesome on that standpoint. And so, yeah, like there's just a lot of challenges that go into building this because it's becoming more than just a podcast.
Yeah.
I think is what it seems like, you know?
Yeah. And I want to hop on like the scheduling of it is, I do think putting on headphones and like a microphone just, and also being in front of a computer screen at the same time, because we could like look at Google Docs and like, hey, all right, I'm typing this out.
Right.
Like this, it's just like we're connected for like that 10, 15 minutes is so much more valuable than, you know, like an hour once a week. But yeah, it's funny you talk about the deadline is I think we're on the same page of, we don't like telling what our deadlines are until like it's done and,
right.
And it's like, okay, like the website's out, it's been up for a little bit of time, but we haven't told anybody. Right. And I think, you know, that's just learning to trust your partner in crime. It's just like, okay, cool. Like we're both on that same page.
Yeah. But
we do need to hit our goals and our stretch goals and put things like, you know, like we want X amount of people every 12 months to be interviewed, you know, and it's like, so far we're on a pretty good rhythm of that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. So for everybody else that's listening, some of our goals were, like basically do 12 interviews for the year, just one a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, oh, and then man, also
you just told everybody so much pressure.
It is media1099.com.
Yeah. Go check it out. Unless you're driving right now, but media1099.
So I wanted to ask you about writing challenges.
Okay.
You know, I have issues sometimes, or I wouldn't say issues, but it's always a process writing for an interview. writing for an intro, writing for a blog post, writing for social. So I may do a little bit more of the copy for us, but in terms of you, like, you know, how you write your questions, how you write, like, how has writing been a challenge for you, and where have you seen yourself progress or not?
I think the biggest challenge is like realizing I haven't written since college, like for somebody else to read, if that makes sense.
Yeah, right.
And that's a long time. You know, that's like a long time of learning a skill of how to write for 18, 20 years and then stopping and then not using
it. Is. Yeah.
So then just realize like, okay, just do it. Like, and I hate to use sports analogies all the time, but like just shoot left-handed and it's awkward, or brush your teeth left-handed for 3 months in a every day for 3 months, brush your teeth left-handed. And after the first 2 or 3 weeks, it doesn't feel awkward anymore, you mm-hmm. know? And so for me, it's just, I hate writing or typing on a computer when I'm writing my first draft, because I feel that I start reading it and I want to jump in and make edits. There's something about pen to paper and writing in cursive in my chicken scratch that nobody could read on a blank piece of paper. That way I'll write. Don't worry about grammar or anything. And then I'll scratch stuff out, put little arrows like, no, this needs to go up here, behind here, use a 4-color pen, and just kind of like realize that nobody's going to see that first draft. And then knowing that technology's evolved to like put into Grammarly.com and they'll touch everything up has really given me the confidence of like, oh yeah, like I'm not horrible at this, you know?
Yeah.
I think the tricky part is going to maintaining that, because when you start, just like this podcast, you pick the low hanging fruit that's like right in front of you. And what's the things you're passionate that are right about right in front of your face. And now it's like, well, if I want to write maybe once a week, once, twice every other week, whatever, like I just need to hop on that and keep doing it more often and set scheduled time for it.
That is a tough part. And yeah, you're the only person that I know that would actually probably write things in hand at this point as a first draft.
Okay,
that's impressive.
I'm telling you, do it, because you don't go back and read what you wrote, because you're like so focused on writing. And then also there's something about having your brain work at the same speed as your writing is.
As your hands, yeah.
Yeah, as your hand, like the physical up and down of it. Is really helped me, one, write better, but also think about what I'm going to say before I say it, like in podcasts, and know that like, yeah, your brain needs to slow down a half second. Don't worry about sending out the message as fast as you can. Be smooth about it and think about it and be concise.
That's a segue into the vocal challenges, I think, and the kind of speaking part of this podcast. Like, where do you feel like you've changed in terms of how things have been from a comfort standpoint, from a skill standpoint, from whether it's writing, reading the outros or whatever the sponsor ads? You know, you do a lot of stuff vocally. How have you feel like you've progressed or whatever in that time frame from episode 1 to episode 82?
Ooh, okay. So after listening to like episode 1, which is, I don't even think our first few episodes were like really published.
Yeah, that's true.
It's funny because like you go through stages. It's like, wow, my voice really sounds like that. Like it sounds horrible.
Mm-hmm.
To like, okay, that's just how I sound, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
To now it's like, wow, I really need to work on giving good questions, you know, in interviews where it's not just something that's maybe in the back of my pocket or like scripted, but how do I mesh components of a conversation that has been going on into a semi-scripted question. I'm not quite there yet. And part of that transition for me is like learning to just read scripted questions, you know, and it's so much easier than trying to make it up as you go.
Yeah.
And I still mess that up.
it is tough. I mean, I know, cause it's like, I tend to write a lot more, mm-hmm. At least in terms of the intros, especially anytime it involves a guest.
Yeah.
Anytime there's a guest, like I tend to do long-winded intros, and I think I've been illuminated to maybe I should taper that down a little bit more and not go as long-winded. And just in itself, that script becomes tricky, and then reading that script so that it sounds natural. And so I am also a person that if I have a script, I may not read it word for word.
Mm-hmm.
I'll use the crux of it, and then I'll kind of veer off a little bit, and then, you know, that involves some challenges because then you come back to the script and then you're like, where am I? And so,
yeah,
I think all of that is tricky. So you do the outros. That's hard to do. I think I would stumble over the outros all the time. Intros are hard. Sponsor ads are very contrived and weird. And how you articulate and how you talk to your audience and to your guests, you know, getting them comfortable, working the questions in, and just really leading, because that's our goal. Like our job is to lead that conversation, and that in itself is kind of challenging.
Yeah. Well, to kind of jump on that as well, is I think I've learned that we need to like stretch our like vocal cords or skills before we hop on an interview. You know, like we'll maybe start on the Zencaster 15, 20, 30 minutes before we start recording, just so you and I could go over a game plan, you know, of like, okay, here's maybe two or three things I really want to hit. Maybe these are two or three questions you want to hit. And I've transitioned that to even just our one-on-one conversations of having more, I guess, confidence in what I am going to say, because it's when I've researched it, it's semi-scripted. And that gives me confidence to say it, because I don't want to just say something just to fill up audio time. You know, right. I think that's like the worst thing. So putting in the research has really made me more confident, and that confidence just snowballs into doing things. And I do agree that the sponsor ads, reading sponsored ads, I have way more appreciation for the people that do it on radio or live TV,
because yeah, they do it every day. Awkward. Yeah. And they do it like, you know, and they just kind of, and I'm like, wow, that's, they do a pretty good job of that.
And even the outros before like were really awkward. And now I try to read it as much as possible. I sometimes go off, you know, on my little tangents, but it's weird, like simple things that you don't think will make a difference that you think like, no, trust me, I could just wing the outro off the top of my head. Like, why take that risk and just write it out and read it? It's so much better.
No, and thankfully we have the ability to kind of re-record and re-edit. So, I mean, recently we had an interview where I botched the intro and then you botched the first question.
Yeah.
And that was one of those hilarious times where we're like, okay, well, thankfully it's our audio track, so we can re-record the intro and the question.
Yeah, it was
like nobody will know the difference.
It was like watching and listening to a slow train wreck over and over. It was funny. But it is nice knowing that that we're able to do that. And also gives me a lot more respect for people that publicly speak a lot, because like politicians, if you stumble once or twice, like it gets picked up and everybody's on their case. And it's like, nah, we're all humans and everybody stumbles every now and then.
Yeah. You know? I think for me, one of the hard things is really figuring out where your weaknesses are. And this takes a lot of self-awareness. It takes a lot of, you know, listening and re-listening to the episodes. And I don't know if you listen to the episodes a whole lot. I usually listen to it like once right off the bat. And then two, trying to figure out where the audiogram might pull from or anything along those lines. But I'll every once in a while listen to an episode and I'll just kind of assess my ability to speak. And one of the biggest issues that I know that I still have is I have these pauses in my speech. So I just kind of pause and I stop and I pause. And that's always something that I have a hard time doing. And so it's training yourself to get more comfortable with your voice and how you articulate your pace, your tone, and how you create mood and excitement or authority or, you know, insight conversation. Those are all things that I think are really hard to do, and it's hard to rehearse it. But you know, it does force me to rehearse it. So like I oftentimes do rehearse, you know, speaking aloud. I speak into the microphone, I have my headphones on, so I will read the intros 30 times. And or whatever it is, like I think for James Patrick, I read it like 30 times or something, just kind of rehearsing it, see if I could get it down. There's also when you do long-winded intros, it's a breath management thing.
Yeah.
As simple as that. Like, so you have to kind of from your diaphragm or whatever, I don't know what vocal coaches teach, it's hard to do. So you really do have to rehearse it. And I can't say I've gotten better at it, but like, I know that I feel more comfortable doing it. It's just that it's at certain paces, I'm never going to necessarily be as good as I want to be. But I think that vocal challenge of just trying to figure out, what do you suck at? You know, how is your, you can't change the sound of your voice, but you can change how you inflect, how you articulate, what your pace is, your tone, you know, all the, because we're trying to create this experience for the audience as well. And that is a difficult thing, trying to navigate questions and answers and your responses. So I'll think about all this stuff and I'll mentally rehearse it, and then I'll actually physically rehearse it as well. And that has been absolutely a kind of like a consistent, there's always speed bumps. You're always like, oh man, I'm good at this. I'm not that good at that. That was a good moment. That wasn't.
Yeah. I don't really listen to the episodes that like we do, like just you and I, as often as though maybe I should, but the interviews I always re-listen to, and yeah, just like judge, critique myself. Like, what do I need to work on? What's getting worse? What's getting better? And also just knowing like, and giving myself slack of knowing like, dude, like I'm not a professional speaker yet. You know, I have a long career still left ahead of us, or right, ahead of me, you know. Speaking of, you know, long future, what do you see in the future? Maybe like 8 months to like a year and a half out. What's some more things you want to either work on that might make more growing pains in the future?
Probably YouTube. And I think we mentioned this, you know, whenever we did our last episode about goals or whatever. I'd say, more visuals. Mm-hmm. One, and this is kind of goes back to that marketing challenge of, you have to find better ways of getting cold emails and DMs out to prospect your guests. You know, mm-hmm. you got to find more value to give in social media. And one of the other areas is just kind of getting us in front of camera. So it's like Instagram TV. I did one post and I'm like, okay, can I do this monthly? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, sure, I can. I know I can. Will I? I don't know. I don't know if I have the willpower to do it. But it's like those things I think have, if you look at our feed, I think it has transformed the look and feel of our feed as a more professional brand, in that we have questions that prospect. We have posts that are about our guests. We have, you know, just one post of me in front of the camera. And like the more and more stuff that goes with that, I think it can expand it. So we've already produced the website. The other area would be email marketing and lead magnets. Like those types of things are huge for me. So 2020 is an email marketing research and action based year for me. So mm-hmm. I want to master to some degree the understanding of it and all the strategies and tactics that I can, and then put into action and then get the results from it. And so I think that and the YouTube would be challenges in the next, you know, forecasting the next 12 months or whatever it is, like, you know, kind of going down that path, hopefully and successfully.
Yeah, I definitely want to figure out something to do with YouTube. I think there's a lot of open potential there. I just think video is hard. Like, it's just like a whole nother ball game. But I do also want to somehow maybe get a LinkedIn going for us. I think that would mm-hmm. be valuable.
Yeah.
Just, it would be another push for like the need to write, you know, because it might have some type of structure where I need to write maybe like once every other week or something for it. Cause I do want to really push on my writing and setting goals and like kind of self, like not self sabotage, but self situations where like, look, your deadline is going to pass. Like, you need to write is really beneficial for me. And also I think the back end, like SEO stuff, like doing some really, really heavy research into that, because one, I think it'll help my personal business, but also this podcast. And it's somewhat easier to learn and through trial and error through this podcast than it is for like my individual self, because the podcast Media 1099 is a brand, you know, and like it's somewhat mm-hmm. abstract. So yeah, I really want to kind of keep pushing forward with that, just to start getting more stats and data and numbers. Like, I think
it's hard looking at that is very
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There really aren't many analytics for people out there. They're like, do you know what your analytics are? It's like, well, I know some things. I basically know how many downloads and plays we get, and that's about it.
Yeah. And I think learning more about that is invaluable, both for our podcast, but also learning how to do that as like a potential tool in your tool belt is very valuable.
And that's one of those areas where if you're looking to get more insight and more information, that's where email marketing comes into play. That's where blogging and all this post come in play, because the analytics are significantly better on mm-hmm. email marketing, at least through ConvertKit. And I think MailChimp, you can do the same thing. you get analytics very, very precise. You mm-hmm. get to see who's downloading your stuff, who's really like staying on your website for how long, you know, who's kind of clicking off within 2 seconds, what regions is this really hitting versus not. So you get more information for sure through those. And that's kind of one of those reasons why, yeah, like let's push that more. And again, it comes at pace, you know, like you can't be an expert at email marketing right off the bat. Yeah. I mean, there are courses for email marketing that cost you $500,000, you know, like that's,
yeah.
So there is a lot to it. It's not just like, oh, you just send out emails. Like, I wish it were that easy, but it's not.
Yeah. And also with YouTube too, like their analytics on the back end, like if you're in YouTube Studio is great. Cause you could see when people click off, like where should right. I put, like,
exactly.
And just, yeah. And there's something about looking at data that I think is very relaxing and interesting to me because it's like people watching.
Right. Exactly. The other area I think is interesting is kind of that, and I touched on it very briefly, but cold emails, cold DMs. That's a challenge because, you know, you're reaching out to people and you want to, the best cold email I ever got was from a guy who actually did his own podcast. And he actually sent out an email to us and I learned so much just from his cold email. It was brilliant. Mm-hmm. He basically gave us a review on our podcast, told us, you know, a little bit about what he loved, the latest episode that we did and why it was applicable. And then he provided value in terms of what his guest could provide us. And I was like, sold. I mean, you, like that's a sales pitch right there, but it didn't feel that way. It just felt like that's just a brilliant cold email. And I try to apply that to the DMs and the emails that I write out as well anytime I'm after something. So, yeah. But it's a challenge because beforehand it was all just like, hey, what can you do for us? And you know, that switching that is challenging.
Yeah. And kind of one more thing I want to kind of work on is moving forward is like gaining more, I don't want to say revenue, like in a sense of like money, but revenue is in a sense of value from this podcast because like we're putting more time and effort into it. And I think I want to show like either what is growth reflected in that or, mm-hmm. you know, is it advertising? Is it less advertising? Is it different advertising? Is it like, I don't know what that is. And I don't know what the definition of value per se is, but I want to see some type of reward for the amount of work that we're putting in it. An award doesn't have to be like money, but it's just like the systems and the website grows, or maybe our followers or interactions grow.
Right.
Because, you know, I think trying to find new value is always important because going way back to the start, like the value of this was just you and I talking and about issues that we've had with the industry or experience. And then the value shifted to, cool, now I'm doing more research in my field.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm doing more research of media of 1099ers in all fields, you know? And so I think really finding new value, quote unquote, streams for us is important in the future.
I think what you're referring to is basically validation, right?
I guess. I don't know.
Like, I mean, and so to me, like, I would agree with you. Like, I think validation is important. I mean, it's a reason for being a presenter, an author, an educator. Like, you were all looking for validation in some fashion that what we're doing here, which is a labor of love as opposed to a cash cow, which mm-hmm. this is clearly not, you know, you want some validation to some degree, and they come in different forms. So I think there's financial validation. And hopefully we can increase that because I think as someone that prides themselves in business, I'd like to think, hey, we're not just doing this to break even. Like let's make yeah. money so that we can reinvest it into the podcast. You know, like this website costs us a certain amount of money. The microphones cost a certain amount of money. And you want some sort of return on that. And so to maximize that as best we can without necessarily being like, hey, everybody donate us money. It's not, we don't do it that way.
Yeah.
We're just trying to maximize within what we can do as best we can. And I think that's just good business. The other validations are in the form of, you know, what people are providing you and what people are telling you about what they've learned from this podcast. So to me, I've gotten a lot of validation from that, from people sending us emails, sending us texts, phone calls, and, you know, personal mailers, you know, things saying thank you for just having the podcast. And, you know, that stuff has actually been hugely beneficial to me, just knowing that, hey, okay, this isn't for just nothing. This isn't just for me and Robert to look at our website and say, oh, that looks good, and nobody else looks at it. and then the other aspect is too, like, you know, we're to get the true validation, I think, for me is like we're starting to see more people. Like, we've had people ask to be on the podcast, which was incredible. Mm-hmm. We had James Patrick, who I was floored by the fact that he even came on when we had like 100 followers, and I was like, are you serious? So that, in a way, just knowing that has been reaching people, and they see the value in it, and they see, okay, you guys are doing it the right way. You know, you're not doing it to get money. You're doing this to provide a change in, you know, the industry, and give people that have no idea about business, that are intimidated to ask people, and all the other people that are supposedly more qualified than us, I shouldn't say supposedly, they are, but they're not doing it because they want to hold their trade secrets close to the vest. And we're the ones saying, hey, you know what? Forget that. We're going to provide value. I think there's validation in that. So on many levels, I feel validated. But at the same time, there's always a need for more. Like, hey, because we're putting more in. It's more sweat equity, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And but those letters and like emails and DMs are like, yeah, they're great. They're like grease for the wheels. They're energy. Like, it's amazing when we get those little...
Absolutely. Like, you just want to know that it's reaching people not named, like, you know, your wife and your mother-in-law or something like that. Like, yeah, I mean, like, I love them, but like, you know, we want to reach people that are like, hey, we've never met, but they're finding us and they're saying, hey, you know, that's a great episode. Like, I that was actually really beneficial. I'm going to change how I think about my business structure going forward. I'm going to listen to what James Patrick said. I'm going to listen to what Matthew Baker said. And those are really, really important to us, to hear people connecting with the material.
Yeah. And also, that's another thing of like connecting with the materials. I think we have a good balance of, you know, like where you are in your career and your career path, where I am and my career path, because, you know, like we're in somewhat different places and we have different perspectives. And that's great, because if we were both thinking the same thing all the time, you know, it'd get kind of boring.
Debate shows exist solely on the premise of you take this stance, I take this stance. And it's like, yeah, like just having that, you know, fire and ice kind of thing, you know, where your experience in video and audio will be significantly higher than mine, and mine in this negotiation will be higher or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think exploring that as well as like of being open with what are some of my weaknesses and what are some of my strengths is also another form of adding value. You know, one, it's confidence in myself, but also confidence in knowing that other people are going through these same ups and downs and issues, and maybe we could, you know, dodge some bullets along the way.
No, I think you're right on that. I do think that, you know, I have the advantage of having a little bit more gray hairs here, and the sense that I get from younger people, younger than me, mainly in their 20s and their early 30s, whatever. And, you know, truth be told, it doesn't really ever end. There are people that are 50 and 60 that they don't want to show that vulnerability. They don't want to, it makes them feel weak if they highlight, oh, this is what, they feel shame, right? Like, mm-hmm. And there's kind of, there's truth to that. And I think there's always truth to that. To me, getting over that was a hugely transformative moment in my life. And I don't expect it to happen to everybody. It's certainly not easily. I was just listening to an audiobook about, you know, debt and how people feel so much shame. They never tell people, or they're always embarrassed to tell them how much credit card debt they have. And there's just like the shame in it. And so sometimes it goes the same way with your hiccups or your failures or whatever. And you don't really want to be that transparent with it. So I get that. That will come, you know, at everybody, at your own kind of pace. Yeah. I wouldn't worry too much about it. But yeah, like, yeah, the more I think you can share, obviously the better, because people want to know, like, hey, am I alone on this, or is Robert going through the same thing? And, you know, what kind of hiccups are they going through, and what can I learn? Because that is such a valuable learning tool for everybody. Yeah. It's very costly for other people to fail, but learn. But if they're learning through our failures, there's no cost to them. So sometimes it's really beneficial to hear, like, hey, Mike absolutely screwed up his business from this year to this year, And this is how I kind of got back on track. There's tremendous value in that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's pretty much a good spot for us to wrap up today. You have any final thoughts?
No, go ahead. And if you want to make your own podcast, you know, go for it. Like, you're going to go through a bunch of stuff because nobody's teaching you this. And, you know, I think we've learned a lot about just how we interact with each other, you know, what kind of roles that we've not even articulated, but somehow just gravitated towards. Like, Amy and I gravitated towards the marketing. You gravitated to, you know, the audio and the production. And, you know, there's just this feeling of like, you know, you figure it out as you go, but then just kind of be aware of what you can kind of push more on and get better at as you go along. Because my favorite saying is, you know, you didn't come this far just to get this far. So once you've done this for 2 years, like, you better be better at certain things. You know, you can't just say, oh, we will get there. It's like, no, well, you better be at this point. You know, we've done 80 episodes. We have to be better at, you know, reading intros. We have to be better at scripting out questions. And, you know, as long as you're not putting over amounts of pressure on yourself, but understanding like, hey, we're doing this so that we can see progress and do that, then you'll be good. And it'll be a learning experience.
Yeah. And I just want to second that by doubling down on like, starting a podcast really makes you fail more often, which makes failing easier. And also having somebody else that's like an accountability partner that to help you kind of go through the growing pains and be like, dude, it's not that bad, or trust me, like, it's all good, is great, you know, because without any wind, a tree won't grow tall, because it doesn't have...
So wise.
It doesn't learn, you know, it doesn't get the strength to stand straight up and tall. So that's what I'm going to leave on. I hope you guys have enjoyed this show. Please hit the like and subscribe button on your favorite podcasting service. We're also excited to promote our newest platform, media1099.com. It's the central hub, which you can find our episodes, blog posts, podcast notes, and so much more. We hope you check it out and sign up for our email list. Wishing you guys all the best in your creative and freelancing and 1099 endeavors. I'm Robert Husky with Michael Durr, and we will catch you on the next episode.